Yesterday, we talked about a new green brand of Coke in Argentina, and it got me thinking about how Coke is as a global brand. It's available in every country, except that is Cuba and North Korea, and that's no surprise. But how did Coke get this global foothold? Mark Pendergrast chronicled the global rise of Coke in his book, For God, Country, and Coca-Cola. He says Coke has a penchant for taking advantage of big moments in history to gain a foothold in new markets.
In 1989, when the Berlin Wall was coming down, Coca-Cola was there handing out six-packs and 12-packs to East Germans, and they poured into East Germany and into Eastern Europe very, very quickly after the Cold War ended. They have always done that. They just went back to Myanmar, Burma, last year as soon as it was possible. Usually, Coke is the very first product in to a place that they've been kicked out. When we finally reestablish relations with Cuba, they'll be there too right away.
Take the Myanmar or Burma case. How come Coke gets there and Pepsi doesn't? What is Coke doing that Pepsi's not?
Coca-Cola got a dominant position in the world, which it has maintained because of this unbelievable deal they made with the U.S. military during World War II. When Pearl Harbor occurred, Robert Woodruff said, "We will get a 5-cent Coca-Cola to our fighting men wherever they are, no matter what it costs." And it was a very patriotic gesture. But what happened was they put Coca-Cola men in army uniforms. They sent them overseas to set up 64 bottling plants behind the lines during World War II so that they were set up for worldwide conquest afterwards. And Pepsi was screaming bloody murder, but they did not get the same deal.
But they have run into problems in the Middle East. I mean, they were the subject of a boycott. How did that happen?
In 1966, Coca-Cola was asked to grant a franchise in Israel by an Israeli bottler. And they turned it down, ostensibly because the bottler had a competitor earlier or something like that. But the Jewish community in America began to boycott Coca-Cola, and so they quickly arranged for an Israeli bottling franchise. But that meant that the Arab world mobilized to boycott Coca-Cola, which they did. One of the problems for Coca-Cola is because they are so well known and because they are so dominant, anything they do is extremely public. There's a wonderful quote. A Coca-Cola executive was writing to another one, said, "Sometimes people seem to confuse Coca-Cola with the United States of America. Perhaps we should not complain too much about this."
How did the boycott, the Arab boycott, end?
Well, it eventually ended through negotiations, and I think Carter helped. Carter, you know, being a good Georgia boy, called Coca-Cola his State Department when he was the governor of Georgia.
In reading your book, you almost get the sense that people at Coca-Cola are as focused on world events as we are in our newsroom, kind of looking for those final markets to penetrate and how best to do it.
I was actually in Coca-Cola headquarters, I believe it was in 1991, when Rajiv Gandhi was assassinated. And everyone was, you know, suitably sad and upset. But somebody commented, "Well, that's not too good for us." Everything that happens in the world is going to have an impact on this soda.
Author Mark Pendergrast, his book is For God, Country, and Coca-Cola, The Definitive History of the Great American Soft Drink and the Company That Makes It. The new updated edition is out this summer. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.